How's it going, ladies and gentlemen? It's Nasipi Zwane back with a brand new episode of Sludge Underground Podcast. And today I'm back with one of the members of The Color Blue, a band that we had back in 2020, and a brilliant alternative rock band from the East Rand. And I'm super stoked and privileged to be chatting to them today. I've got Leon, who is the drummer, I believe. Am I correct in saying you're the drummer, sir?
No, I'm the vocalist.
I'm
not talented enough to be the drummer.
Oh, I'm so sorry about that, man. But it's you know, you have such an amazing thing going, you know, as a band. I remember listening back to the episode with Marcel, and you know, just how the band started and how the name came about is so inspirational and such. Looking at the fact that it's been 3 years since we've had you guys on the show, has anything changed for the band in terms of, you know, your approach in making new music and maybe playing gigs at all?
Yeah, I think the industry as a whole has changed massively in the last 3 years, you know, we've just tried to adapt and find a way. But lots of exciting things happening, you know. We've played a couple of shows, but it's more about recording singles and releasing singles at the moment, and recording new music.
That's very beautiful. And obviously, speaking about new music, there is Love in Space, which you guys released a lyrical or like a lyric music video for. What I want to get from you is, you know, when it comes to lyric music videos, how beneficial do you think they are for artists in general? How was the feedback for your guys' lyric music video? It wasn't your first one, obviously, but what is it about lyric music videos that makes you sort of keep going back to them? And are they working? Are they effective? Would you recommend them for other artists as well?
Yeah, I think, you know, with camera technology and cell phones and a little bit of creativity, you can make videos easy. A couple of years ago, I remember when I started in bands, I was like 15, 16, and it was like 20, 30, 50K to make a video. I think when you release a single now, even more important than making the video is to try and get the lyric video out quickly. It's at least something, a presence. And with the turnaround time on singles, you know, you see very few big bands or very few bands making making full albums these days. You know, it's a single, a release, a lyric video, and your visualizers are important for Spotify. You got to play the game, you know, and the game changes and you got to move with the game. So I do think it's important doing lyric videos. At least it's a visual product. And I think the cycle time, I mean, normally you would release a single, it would be 6 months to a year before you do the next one. Now, you know, cycle times are like really short now, 2-3 months, and you got to have a new single out kind of thing, you know, to stay relevant on the algorithms. So yeah, I do think that lyric videos are important, and I think they're becoming more and more a mashup between a lyric video and between a music video, you know, and more DIY and cheaper and faster to make. So yeah, absolutely, I think it's important to do those things.
You mentioned playing the game. You mentioned Spotify there and its requirements and such. What would you say the takeaway is, or what do you get in return as a band, like looking at The Color Blue? Because obviously it's no secret that Spotify doesn't really pay that much for streams. So it's almost like we are adhering to a system that doesn't really give back any sort of financial gain. So if not, you know, any financial gain for these platforms that we are conforming to, what would you say is the kickback of sort of, you know, conforming or being in line with the requirements and playing the game? What do you get in return as a band?
You know, again, when I started, I thought I was going to be super rich and make lots of money. And no one I know has really done that, you know. That's why I built the studio and I sort of started the record company and things, you know. I think it's important for people to realize that in the current environment that we're in, it's very difficult to make money from your art. I think if you are making enough money to sustain your art, you're doing well. A source of income was always doing gigs. Unfortunately, I've seen it dwindling in shows. There's not a lot of people. There's a certain amount of people that go to shows, and that's there's no new people coming into watching shows, you know. I remember if you played a show in 2008 or 2007 and you played a local show in a small town, it would be full, man. That doesn't really happen anymore. And I think content on demand has also killed that mystery where people don't really want to go out. I love the live raw experience, but it also costs money to go do that. So bands have to be clever. When it comes to playing the game, I can't speak for other bands or other musicians, but what we do is I want people to remember us as a group. I want people to remember our music. So it's key for me to put the music out there so that it's there and it's a quality product. And I think if it's a quality, because at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's art as a product. If it doesn't sound good, then no one's going to want to listen to it. So it's important not to get stuck in a certain idea of what you're supposed to be. And we were there. We were stuck in that. Yeah, Spotify. We're not making money out of this. And I very quickly realized, just before the release of Love and Space, that you have to be a good citizen. In whatever platform you decide to release on, we didn't do single CD prints or any other prints, for Love and Space, because we didn't see a point in doing that. We went fully digital. If you do the right things and you have the visualizers and you've got the story behind the music and you've got the artwork and the lyric video and you do it correctly, then Spotify and the algorithm will reward you. And we got a lot of streams on Love and Space very quickly, which we were added to quite a couple of playlists. And I've seen the knock-on effect from that with our listenership growth. And I think that's where bands have to look at. Yeah, I mean, I remember 10 years ago talking to Armando, who's our drummer. And we always sit and analyze, how do we get the music to the people? And we were saying 10 years ago, just when we were just busy with writing the first album, and we're like, yo, how are we going to do this? And he said, yo, if we can just get into their bedrooms on their phones, and that's exactly where we are now. People listen to music, they stream music. You need to, it has to be part of your strategy. I'm not saying there's no place for physical copies. There are selling merch, selling caps, selling shirts, selling artwork. It's all absolutely part of the game, but you have to have that digital strategy. And from an audio perspective, also, when I master and when I have to master for Spotify and I have to mix for Spotify, and I would do it differently than on a physical printed CD. You need to do it different. So it's understanding all these little things.
I mean, you guys have been in as individuals, you guys have been doing this for a very long time. I want to get your personal sort of, preference in terms of the eras, in terms of the era when, you didn't have to master for Spotify, you didn't have to do all these things in order to, up the engagement and the listenership on these platforms, where everything was sort of like, analog, where things were also like you made CDs and everything like that there. For you, which do you prefer as someone who's sort of experienced both?
Even listening and speaking a lot to Armando, who was he's still, he was exposed to a piece of the industry even before me, when they would still go to Radio Park and you'd record in the big under Studio One or Studio Two, and it would it would just cost you a lot of money to have 8 hours of studio time, so you'd be way more focused and going in there and making quality music, and then it would bomb. Nothing would happen. So I remember when I was with Blacklist Rock, and we were doing the scene. We had a huge cult following, and it was about putting up posters, and it was about hitting small towns and having building a very loyal following, and people would appreciate the CD or the album or the EP, whatever you would release. It would be like a, you don't just listen to one song, you listen to the whole album, you listen to the whole EP, you know every song. It's not just, and you would obviously try and get radio play, and radio play would drive people to come to the shows. Now, radio is less relevant. Unfortunately, the big difference for me is radio is not relevant. Streaming killed radio, according to me. It's and I see this. I'm actually on the board of a radio station, which I won't mention, but I'm on the board of a radio station, and I can actually see that the listenership, radio was a vehicle where you use the music to sell advertisement. Now the advertisers aren't really flocking to stations. They're not doing great at the moment, purely because people listen to Spotify and Deezer and Apple Music and YouTube Music. They're streaming music. So in a way, I think if used correctly, it's just another cycle in time, and it's like the car and the horse and the cart. You have to adapt. We're never going back. It's not going back. And like I said, there's space for the true diehard fan will buy the physical copy and he'll buy the album because he wants that. He wants the art. He needs that. But we want to take our music with us. We want to take our TV with us. We want to take our sport with us. You know, it's all on our phone. So we have to build it around that. And I think you can cater to both those worlds, you know. I don't think it's a one or other or zero sum game.
Very brilliant answer. I can tell that you're on the board of like one of the radio stations because a lot of artists struggle with that one. They'll be like, "Oh, I don't know. Oh, it's you know, there's pros and cons on each." But you've labeled it brilliantly. That was perfect, actually. It actually sort of makes me
Excellent.
some of the things that you were saying there, where like content on demand has sort of killed, you know, live shows and things like streaming has killed radio. One of the things that seems like a vital tool, though, in this day and age would be like SEO, where, you know, the stuff that you put up online needs to be, you know, to in a sort of way where it's easily discoverable, and factoring in things like YouTube and factoring things like, you know, Google and search engines and all that there. Would you say this is maybe something that you guys are conscious of as a band? I mean, I asked this because I'm looking at The Man, which was obviously like a tribute to one of the bands, was Queen, and I don't know if that would. If you guys saw any difference in terms of the streams that got, considering that Queen and David are you know brands that are you know searched up quite frequently, just tell me about the dynamics behind that. Do you guys ever think of things like that, like SEO, search engine optimization, and such before releasing something?
Yeah, absolutely. Yet again, it's that's actually a very good comparison. Look, when we did Under Pressure, it was a release that was supposed to be a tribute, and we released it very generic in where it was released on radio, and there was not too much focus on the digital release. And in comparison to that, I think that got onto the SA. It did very well on the radio chart. It was on a couple of charts and it got good radio play, but it didn't get a ton of streams. Whereas when we released Love and Space and we focused completely on a digital release strategy, it completely blew it away on the digital, you know, the digital release strategy. So yes, it's not doing, like I said, it's not just doing one thing. You have to do your EPK, your social media sites, embracing even TikTok. TikTok is something that you have to, it has to be there, but it's not like the go-to. Your social media pages is the go-to now, you know. That's the way I see it. But absolutely, you must have a presence. So that digital presence is extremely important. Optimizing searches. I never want to piggyback on another band's name, like doing a tribute and then Queen and David Bowie, and that leads to. I don't want to do that. We pondered. We sat here in the studio, and I said, "Do we really want to release this, or do we just want to keep it for ourselves?" You know, and we other people said to us, "Release the thing and put it out." You know, it's really cool. But I could clearly see the digital release and the focus on that. It's like the tide that lifts all ships. If you release the song you release now will lift your older songs as well if you play the game correctly on the digital platform. So yeah, it's the way it has to work.
It's very brilliant. It's very brilliant indeed. Obviously, you know, with all these sort of learning points, you know, we have to come to a point where we focus on obviously what's coming up and what we can expect from you guys. You obviously, you know, mentioned the lyric music video that you guys drop. You mentioned, you know, you guys have been playing all these shows and, you know, the different strategies that the Color Blue has sort of applied in their journey in the digital sort of realm and space. With you guys, what are sort of the plans? Because I do know that you guys have an album that you currently working on. I do know that you guys have a few singles that you're working on that are on the way, especially also looking at the fact that it's almost Christmas. Is that something that you guys factor into maybe the upcoming releases? Let me in on the future plans and such.
We wanted to, but look, I'll be honest with you. We've got about six singles lined up that we wanna put out. So we're in the process currently of recording the track, And what we're doing different this time is I'm filming the whole process. You know, the band's
Nice.
filming everything in the studio that happens. So every single will be released with a little story video on how we recorded that single. I think our strategy is very much we're not going to do anything for this Christmas. We're going to hit 2024 with the new music, and we're going to aim to do four singles in 2024. So every 3 months we're gonna put out a single, and the one is gonna build on the other one and try and tell a story, and obviously invite the listener and the people who want to see how we do things into the studio, where how we're recording, you know, how we're going about the process, and you know, everything in between. I say, and every time we're asked about these new songs, that these songs are probably, for me and for the rest of the lads, the best music we've ever written, you know, and because we really, there's no constraints, or we just wrote exactly what we felt like writing. And if someone didn't like it, we didn't do it. We went and did something else, you know? So everyone loves it. And there's no censorship. Yeah, there's no self-censorship. And when I'm what I mean with that is no, oh, I can't do that because it's not, or I can't do that because it's not gonna. We just went and did it. And I think the video aspect of adding not per se the music videos, but the actual in studio videos of us, you know, talking about the songs and you know, how we go about the process. I think that'll invite people into our studio and into our world. So we're gonna focus completely on that for the next year. As well, from now on, it's going to be completely on building this story and this narrative and this little color blue movie, effectively with four singles sprinkled all over it. And that will lead into, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but that will re lead into an album release that will include these songs and a couple of other songs included with them, probably around 2025. But that's the plan going forward. So there's lots of content. It's all about creating more and more content for everyone to see and to live on the internet.
Yeah, 100%. I love how you guys are planning deep into the future as well. You know, you mentioned in 2025 there. It's incredible that the rollout goes, you know, that far. The last question I want to ask you is one that pays homage to Devo, who organized this interview. Once again, the shout outs. And the importance. I want to get from you how important it is to move around as a band and as an artist, or whoever's sort of receiving this. How important is it to work with a publicist? You know, who's going to be there, you know, to sort of back you up in terms of, you know, organizing certain things for you.
Yeah, listen, I got a cool story about this. I was about 18, and we were opening for Saringas at the time. I was in a band that played a lot of shows
Nice.
with Saringas, and they were still Seether, you know,
See
they
the,
became Seether, they were still Saringas. I said to him, "Man, I need some. What's the difference, man? What's the one thing?" And he said to me, "Get a good publicist." And I didn't understand that until I was 30. Okay. And I believe we've had some, yeah. And I believe we've had some wonderful people helping us along the way. And you need to not be afraid of letting go of certain people, and nicely, always nicely, never burn a bridge. You know, everyone's got their roles to fill, and they might take you to a stage, and then to go to another stage, you need someone else. And that's just the way it works, you know. And all those people will still push you, they'll still help you along the way. So we've been fortunate to have many people help us and assist us, from managers to bookers to agents. And we still have a relationship with all those people, which is wonderful. Bevo is the next step for us. And he is really, he's an incredible human. And there's a lot of synergy in the way we think, and where we are as a band and what we currently want to do, and the way we see the industry. He's got so much experience. And I've worked with one or two other publicists, and they're all great, but Devo's just got something special where he sees the wood for the trees, you know. And it's extremely, I can say, get for any young band or anyone starting up, get your music together, get your direction together, and your plan. Remember, the publicist's job is not to make your plans. You need to make the plans. You need to manage yourself and find your direction and do the hard work. and then tell the publicist, I've got this product, can you publicize, can you push this for me? It's not his job to create the, and I think it's important to understand that for any musician out there, you need a great publicist and you need a great product. And Devo is just an incredible human.
I can definitely agree with you on that one. He is an incredible human being. I want to thank you, Leon, for doing this episode with me. For anyone who wants to get in touch with The Color Blue and everything that you guys are up to, what are your social media handles for them?
Cool. Website is just thecolorblue.co.za. On Facebook, it's just The Color Blue. On Twitter, it's at The Color Blue. On X, it's at The Color Blue. The same with Instagram, it's at The Color Blue. On TikTok, it's The Color Blue Band. And then anyway, you just Google The Color Blue Music or The Color Blue Band, and you'll find our social. We're all over the internet. Same with YouTube, it's at The Color Blue. So yeah, just follow our journey, man. All streaming platforms as well. Yeah.
It's been an epic episode. Catch everything Sludge Underground on our website, www.sludgeunderground.com. Get that merch, it's the best way to support the show. And always continue to follow The Color Blue. They're an amazing band. They were an amazing band in 2020. They're still an amazing band now. So thank you for tuning into this episode. Until next time, it is bye for now.